Welcome to The Power of Stories, a podcast by women, about women, and for women. Their voices and their stories. I am Sharon Catherine D'Agostino, founder of sayitforward.org.
And I'm Yodit Kifley-Smith, a creative on a mission to make sure that the voices of women are heard. In this podcast, you will meet courageous women from around the world whose unique path to empowerment will leave you encouraged and inspired. On today's episode, we are so happy to have Belinda Greb, who is joining us from rural Oregon. Belinda is an accomplished nature and wildlife photographer who has been influenced by her sense of belonging in and connecting with nature. Belinda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me. Thank you.
Belinda, it's great to welcome you, and having admired your photography for a number of years now, I'm very curious about what drew you to nature and wildlife photography.
I did grow up in a rural setting, so that has always been my go-to place for solitude, peace. I had a camera. I wanted to take a photography class in high school. The camera I was going to use was broken, so I never finished that photography class. And I had a camera for a long time, but I never really went beyond the basics until I started in New York. I was doing graphics presentation and I learned Photoshop. And at that time, photography was becoming digital. And so that really drew me in and back to photography. And initially I started with landscape, but because of my love of, you know, beautiful places that are in a natural setting, lately I've just been veering more and more towards wildlife because I've always loved animals.
How do you describe that connection that you have with animals?
You know, having had animals from an early age, my father was an animal lover, so we grew up with dogs, cats. I think sometimes people see them as less than human, they not having a consciousness. And I think people who have pets know that there is a consciousness there. There is an intelligence. It may not be the same as ours, but it does exist. When I started to go out and photograph nature, I started to photograph wild horses. I always have loved horses. I never had any, but I always loved horses. And then going out and seeing the wild horses and seeing the dynamics and how they live in a natural setting with their familial bands, I started just thinking about how animals are and wanting to really know them in a more natural setting, see them in their own habitat. When people usually have horses or dogs, you just have one dog, two dogs, but they're not related. When you see them out in the field, you have this family relationship. Even though a band may be split up, later on, the horses can see each other on the range and you see the affection. Sometimes you see animosity. You see the prior relationship. And it's powerful to realize that it's not just humans that have that ability. So every time I observe a different breed, you just learn more and more about animals. And, you know, that connection just intensifies.
Your photography is just so amazing. Your connection with the animal is pretty obvious, but how do you make us feel connected to those animals? Because somehow through your photography, you do.
Oh, that's good. That makes me happy. I guess when you're looking at them and you're observing them, you're trying to catch their spirit in the way. You're trying to catch their essence and you're trying to translate that to others. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And I don't know that there's a specific way or steps that I'm taking to do that. And I'm also observing them. And also I learned from my own photography because I have a telephoto lens, of course. So sometimes you see things when you're reviewing your pictures that you didn't even see at the time, which is one thing I love about photography is that it stops time. And then later you can look and you see things that weren't apparent initially. For instance, one time I was photographing this one wild horse that I loved. Later, when I took the picture, I noticed he had a big gash on his chest. It made the picture actually more compelling because you see that their lives are not easy. It was just one of those things where you learn more about that, mm-hmm. which I might not have noticed with my naked eye. I might not have seen the gash. I might just see a wild horse, but knowing that they actually do have to survive out there, mm-hmm. you know, makes you appreciate them more.
In our introduction of you, you know, we said that there is also this, you're influenced by this sense of belonging. Can you mm-hmm. just talk to us more about that?
I am biracial. I'm half Chinese, half white. So I never really felt like I had my own tribe. And I grew up in an area where it was mostly a white school, a very few people of color. I really didn't fit into anywhere. So I think where I really felt like I could connect was with animals and with nature. It wasn't like I had to fit in. I just could be myself. And I think I've tried to live my life choosing my own principles. I don't want to just adopt any type of principles that might belong to a culture. I want to develop my own.
This theme of not feeling like we belong is something that we have heard from a number of guests on this podcast for many different reasons. At what age do you think you were when you started to feel like, I am different and I don't feel like I fit exactly?
Maybe at 8 or 9. You know, there were some incidences where people came up to me and teased me about being different looking, or even not even knowing what ethnic group I was. They were perceiving me in a certain way. And so I started to question my own self. And you start to feel like, oh, what's wrong with me? You have to kind of build yourself up and realize there's nothing wrong with you. There's something wrong with the world. Or just the lack of the ignorance or the lack of exposure that people have to other cultures. They lack the ability to just judge a person on who they are and not having to have them fit into any type of shape that that person thinks they should fit into. So that has influenced me. And it takes a while to kind of come to terms with that. But in a way, it's a really big gift, because I do think it just opens up your mind. You start questioning things. It also makes you sensitive to when you hear something about another ethnic group. It just makes you feel like that's not right. That's not who I want to be.
So you have a passion for increasing awareness of the impacts of climate change on humans and on nature and on animals. Talk to our listeners a bit about that.
First of all, I always have had that, because when you're out in the field, you see the changes that happen. For instance, when I go out and look at wild horses, you see, first of all, their habitat is limited. It's being encroached upon by ranchers. The lack of predators, which makes an imbalance in the natural setting. So then we feel like we have to moderate that, or, you know, control it. And so we take actions that are really sometimes horrible. But also you see the effects of droughts. And I live in Oregon now. I have lived here for the past 20 years. And it used to be so rainy, I never thought there would be any problems with droughts. But where I live, which is a forested area, Douglas firs, conifers, and I have been affected by a forest fire, the forest fires of 2020, where there was multiple fires going on both in California and Oregon. And I was just one of the people who lost my home to a forest fire and lost everything, basically, except for what I grabbed at that point, which was my dog and my cameras and one of my computers.
How did you escape the fire? How did you get away?
It was interesting, because there were high wind warnings, which I had gotten in the afternoon. When I came home, it was smoky, but it was actually from another fire that was about 75 miles away. And the power went off at 8 o'clock at night. So I didn't really know what was going on, but I was a little bit nervous because the winds were starting to pick up. And so I got onto a community board. So I saw that there was a fire broken out 17 miles north of us. And I started getting more nervous, of course, and keeping an eye on that. My neighbor called, and you know, he said he was going to evacuate. And so I thought, well, I'll do that too. I was gathering stuff together, which is like really difficult because it's pitch black. The flashlights weren't charged. Nothing was really ready to go. But you kind of grab things really quickly, always with the belief that you're going to be coming back to your home. You really didn't believe that anything was going to happen to it. And it wasn't until like 2 or 3 days later that I went up to the property, not thinking that my home was still there, but and then seeing that it wasn't. And it was devastating, not so much that I lost everything, because that was a blow too, but it was more because I live in this area that's so beautiful, so many trees that were 100 years old or 200 years old. I would say 60% of the trees are gone in a 17-mile stretch. It's really horrible.
What changed after that for you?
You know, it's a long process. In order to survive, you have to just go through it. Just like with anything, there's good sides and bad sides. I went through a period of terrible grief for 2 years. But I think what it did give me was more compassion towards people in other areas who are being affected by climate change or anything else where they lose their home, their country. Even though I felt like I was compassionate before, this really brought it home as far as what that meant. It's had a profound effect. And, you know, we have such an attachment to things in this Western world. And I think that has kind of gone by the wayside for me. It's kind of changed my path a little bit. I'm actually going out on the road. It took me a while to get back into photography, really full stream. But I think now it has taken on a sense of urgency. My wanting to record what's out there, the beauty that's out there, and how important it is to preserve that.
I can't even imagine that sense of losing your home and your community. How did you reconnect with your sense of hope?
For a year or so, I don't think I had much of it, but I did have friends who were so supportive, and I did continue going out into nature. And so that was always so important to me, because I know one of the first feelings I had after the fire was, all I wanted to do was go look at young animals, baby animals, and just see the beauty out there. That was just a pillar of strength for me. At first, you know, my mind was kind of a wreck, but after a year or so, then I started meditating again. That helps. So seeing the birds come back, seeing some of the flora come back, that's, you know, really moving.
You talked about earlier about just perception and people's perception of you. And as a photographer, as an accomplished photographer, what has been your journey with you being content with the work that you do versus someone else's perception of your work?
I am in an online forum with other photographers and artists. And sometimes you do get criticism back, especially initially at the beginning. And it kind of like was, oh, you felt like so bad. But then once you kind of get over that pain, then you start to give yourself an honest look at your own work and say, okay, this is where I can improve. And we can always improve. And there's always moments where you kind of like, well, I didn't do such a great job in that. But it's always an evolution.
And have you ever gotten to the place where you said, yeah, I'm really good at what I do? Or is that hard for you to say?
No, I think I'm getting more confident now. But I know that there are some times where, you know, if I'm not with it and I'm having a bad day, that's okay. That's all right. It's been like maybe 12 years or so where I've really been trying to work on my photography. And it's taken a long time for me. I feel pleased with most of my work, maybe not always all the time, but some of my work I really love. So that's good. You just have to believe in yourself and continue to try and improve yourself. And that's all you can do.
This point that you're making about believing in yourself, what would you tell our listeners who are struggling with that? Because so many people do, and especially women, struggle with just loving who they are and believing in themselves.
I mean, I think what our responsibility is to live the fullest life that we can. In fact, I think you do best when you don't think about yourself and you just think about what resonates with you, what makes you feel good, as far as like what you're doing that really feeds you spiritually and emotionally. I just think there's no point in getting hung up on what other people think. You're never going to satisfy some people. When you have one friend or two friends or, you know, a partner, they're there for you and they love you. That's enough. Not to say that we don't all self-critique, because, you know, that's always going to be there. And I would say also be fearless. I mean, I think that is something, you know, I always love that quote, go forth, you know, and things will come. That has come back in my life. Whenever I felt the most alive, the most connected, was when I went and did something, even though I didn't know how I was going to do it. I moved to New York when I was 31 or so, and I didn't know what I was going to do in New York. I left my job. I just wanted to live there. I had always wanted to live there, and I did it. And I did some planning. It was wonderful. And then, you know, and that ran its course. The things that you kind of do, and you don't they're not necessarily logical, but you're following your intuition and you're making it work. And then you start taking small steps towards that goal. And then it happens. And that's usually when you kind of get into the flow and you feel connected, you feel alive, and it's wonderful.
So how can we all encourage other women and girls to confidently use their voice and claim their power?
There's nothing to lose. If you don't do it, that's when you're losing your opportunity. For instance, I went to Alaska. I traveled up there for 2 months and I met this woman, and she had been raised in a Seventh-day Adventist family. And it wasn't until she was 30 that she decided this really wasn't her. She didn't want to be telling people what they should read, what they should believe in, when she didn't necessarily believe in it herself. And so at that point in time, she had to really sacrifice her family and her community in order to kind of step away from that and find out what life she had to live. She does part-time guides, seasonal work up in Alaska and different areas, but she also has learned to fly a plane. You know, she's amazing. I mean, especially at such a cost of losing her family. I found that very inspiring. And the thing is that you can sit there in time, again, I think have a sense of urgency about your life. Not, you know, I believe that we live multiple lives, but still we don't live multiple lives as our, you know, this person, Belinda, or, you know, Yodit. So I do believe that we have this opportunity to kind of go out and express ourselves and learn, experience life. And if you just sit at home because you're fearful, that is something to be afraid of. You have fear in that situation that you're not doing it.
Thank you so much, Belinda. I'm always amazed. You know, we've talked with, goodness, so many women from around the world, and how just unique our lives are, unique our passions are, and yet at the same time, so similar in the passion to journey through this life, finding our voice and sharing it. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And as always, to our listeners, thank you for listening to these episodes, and we hope you're inspired by them.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Belinda, it has been wonderful talking with you, and you've said so many interesting and also inspiring things. And I especially love your encouraging us all to believe in ourselves. Is there any message that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Just, you know, life is beautiful. No matter what happens, I just think even with things that go wrong, it can be so beautiful, and immerse yourself in it.
We invite you, our listeners, to visit sayitforward.org and to share one or more of your stories about your unique path to empowerment. Or you can read the stories others have shared. This is Sharon Catherine D'Agostino
and Yodit Kifley-Smith signing off for now and hoping you'll join us next time. If you enjoyed this episode, we hope you'll recommend The Power of Stories to a friend. And lastly, we want to remind you of the power of your story.